In fact, Borrell does not seem to appreciate that the increasing political and economic stability within the Garda nations make it increasingly difficult, if not possible, for them to pursue his misguided foreign policy agenda. Obviously, the view from Bruges differs from that from, say, Athens. Second, let us examine Borrell's prescription for exporting Western stability to the jungle states that languished threateningly outside the gates of the EU Garden of Eden. Borrell's solution is deceptively simple. Just let the EU gardeners impose Western hegemony on those unstable jungle nations. With it almost goes without saying the helpful assistance of the United States. Readers will not be surprised to learn that Borrell is a keen supporter of the United States. Last year, he stated one thing is clear. Close US-EU cooperation based on shared values is key for international peace, security, and prosperity. Even if his Bruges speech did not explicitly include the US in his imaginary garden, he obviously does not think of it as part of the rest of the world. Borrell apparently has failed to notice that the US has spent the last few decades attempting to implement its foreign policy program in spades, for example, in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria. He seems unaware that these previous attempts to tame the jungle ended in chaos. Nor, of course, does he acknowledge that many of the problems that plague the jungle nations today were in fact caused by such misconceived interventions. Borrell's entire worldview is nothing more than a global elite fantasy, designed in part to camouflage the unpalatable fact that the Western Garda nations are in fact becoming more and more like the non-Western jungle countries that he despises and fears. Isn't the political, economic, and social instability that today afflicts almost all Western nations, in large part caused by the West's mistaken foreign policy incursions, precisely the same instability that has beset some non-Western nations for decades? And hasn't this instability intensified dramatically in the West in recent years? Test that proposition by way of a comparison relating to political instability. Brazil has experienced chronic political instability for decades. Prior to the recent presidential election, President Jair Bolsonaro announced that he would not accept the election result if he lost. In the United States, former President Trump refused to accept his election defeat in 2020, culminating in the January 6th Capitol riots. Trump and dozens of candidates endorsed by him have since maintained their position that Joe Biden's 2020 victory was illegitimate. Bolsonaro narrowly lost the recent presidential election in Brazil, but after his defeat, he did not accept the result, even if his supporters staged mass protests in the streets. Trump and many of his candidates are now refusing to accept the results of the U.S. midterm elections, let alone the 2020 result, and Trump intends to run again for president in 2024. Looking at the two countries' relative political stability, where does one put the garden fence? Just this week, two important events highlighted just how divorced from reality Borrell's worldwide view actually is. First, at the COP27 conference in Egypt, the jungle asserted its autonomy by demanding payment of billions of dollars in reparations for the damage done to its countries by climate change. This demand lies completely outside Borrell's crude fame and frame of reference, and perhaps most disturbingly, seems completely justified by the EU's own catastrophic climate change ideology. We suspect that the EU gardeners will find any such reparations a tough sell to EU citizens who cannot pay their energy bills this winter. Second, It is now appears that the Biden administration is placing increasing pressure on Vladimir Zelensky to negotiate a settlement of the conflict in Ukraine, and that this pressure will intensify once the Republicans take control of the U.S. House of Representatives. Where this leaves a fervent and uncritical supporter of the conflict like Borrell, or Zelensky for that matter, is not yet clear. Borrell is nothing more than a rather unsophisticated representative of the global elites that have blindly and rapaciously presided over the decline of European and Western political and economic stability in recent decades.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of Back to Reality. Hope you're doing great and everything is just fine with you. Now that we have your precious attention, buckle up to fly beyond the surface of your favorite topics. You're listening to IRB English Radio, and this is Asma at your service as the host. Well, and here with me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Abu Zahra. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu
alaikum. Wa alaikum. It's a pleasure to have you both in here. Well, as the ritual of this program, let's start with the guests, and I hope they would give us a very brief introduction about themselves and their study.
Of course, actually, it's a big pleasure for me to be here in this episode and talking to you, dear co-hosts, and also your listeners here. I'm Bita at your service, and I'm a medical student who is really interested in that sort of discussions.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here, and you, brother.
Assalamu alaikum to you and to all the listeners. Yeah, so I'm a Hausa student. Mm-hmm. I'm in my, I think in my ninth year. And before this, I was in university doing life sciences. So, yeah.
So I wish both of you success and much more of it. For today's episode, we're going to talk about brain drain, something that happens in many countries. You know, whenever I come to think of brain drain, I remember birds when they want to migrate from a place into another in search of a better place, you know, as the season change, and then they want to go and find a better shelter or perhaps better foods or whatever, just something that is more fit to their nature. So they go into another places. And the same thing, I guess, happens with human beings. Yet, there are more details to it. Now, I want you to tell me your ideas about this stuff.
First, let me clarify the meaning of brain drain
more
for dear listeners. When intellectual and, you know, educational parts of a society will then just decide to migrate from that country to another country, which actually happens most for developing countries to developed countries, we call this actually phenomenon brain drain. And actually, this phenomenon is somehow quite common in many countries, even in my own country, actually. And my own opinion about this is that actually it is something natural. When you are intellectual, where you are educated in a country, and this country cannot provide you with some facilities that you have to have, mm-hmm. you know, it's somehow logical and rational for you to decide to go to another place for just seeking whatever you need for living better, actually.
I would disagree with that being something rational to do. I understand why somebody would want to do that. Mm-hmm. I understand that people are always looking for better opportunities for living a comfortable life. But that's about a matter of worldview, like how do you see things, right? If a person thinks about it properly, isn't it better to stay in your country and help your country to develop itself? Shouldn't we come out of our comfort zone and see how, despite the fact that we're not getting officially opportunities, like the standard opportunities, like, you know, here's a job for you, come here and work for us.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we be thinking out of the box and see how can I go around this system and sort of fix the issues this has, right? If we really believe in our country and believe in helping the people, and that being a reason why we're working, right? If we're just working for money, money, money all the time, then yeah, that makes sense. But if we look bigger and we think, you know, my country is important, right? Like, you know, you feel for your country.
Yeah.
You would be like, you know what? Okay, there are all these barriers. How can I get over these barriers, right? I think that would be a more rational thing to do, I think.
So right now, let's put it in here and go for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Do we call brain drain when I go for a study abroad in order to gain more knowledge and come back to my country to help my country?
Yeah, oh. So this is where, no, that wouldn't be brain drain, right? Because you're going there, you're benefiting from the good, but then you're coming back to serve your country. You're not leaving a gap in your country. You're, in fact, training yourself to be able to fill any gaps even better.
Yeah, so this is not called brain drain.
No, I wouldn't call that brain drain. I would think that that would be a very wise thing to do, right?
Yeah.
There are certain things to, in order to help your country, you might need to go out and you know, build yourself first. So the training ground is different to the actual, you know, the front line.
So
where, you
I
know,
guess
you go in.
What happens mostly is this one.
I just, at least from the background I come from, African countries, I've noticed that the usual trend is that students go to European countries, for example, they initially go to study. Everybody knows that 90% of them are going to stay there.
They're not going to come back.
Yeah, they're not going to come back. And you know that, right? That's why we see our communities, especially the Muslim communities in what we call the third world countries, we see that they're reducing in size. Why? Because all the youths are just going to the West.
Yeah.
Right? And this has a lot of implications, not only for the country that they're leaving. Mm-hmm. So, for example, right now we don't have great... You're studying medicine, right?
Yeah.
So all the medics, usually, so now what you've done is, alhamdulillah, I would commend that you've stayed over here. I presume you're Iranian, right?
Yeah.
So I really commend the fact that you're studying, you're doing your medical degree over here, and the fact that hopefully you'll stay here and serve your country, right? Especially as a sister, there's a lack in women doctors in Iran. And as a Muslim community and society, there can't be anything more important than women doctor. I mean, it doesn't make sense for women to go to men gynecologists.
Yeah.
As a Muslim, right?
Yeah, I know that, but you know, you're talking so idealistically. You know, it's not like okay, my country is whatever. I have to, I have to commit my life, my everything, sacrifice everything for my country and something like that. Nobody's like that, actually. Nobody in my generation.
No, not ever. Let's say not everybody.
That's what we should be working towards, right?
I'm not going to go so extreme to that, but it's like okay. First of all, what are my priorities? You know. And this is the most important factor in choosing where you want to go, you want to leave and something like that.
So what is the priority of the person who leaves their country? Who leaves their country for a better life?
Actually, a better life is a priority for most of the people.
Yeah, but is that ideal though? The question here is we should be thinking ideal and then bringing that into practical life. If we don't think ideal and if we don't think high, then we'll never progress. As an individual myself, if my purpose in life is just to have comfort, then why even go in the medical field? You've got the wrong step completely. There's no money in it. You're going to be spending night shifts. You're not going to have a stable family.
There is
family.
Money
there,
in it. Actually.
There is money with a lot
after
of effort.
A long time.
Yeah, after a long time and with a lot of effort and sacrifice. My father is a doctor, right?
Nice.
I was initially going to go into the medical field. For personal reasons, I didn't go into it. But one of the things is it's a very hard and tough, a tough place. No one goes in the medical field with the idea that I want comfort in life, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many people going into that. That's when we realize that, you know, there's something bigger that the human being is going after. And you see this in people who leave their, you know, there's a lot of people leaving the West, going to African countries and poor countries to help people. That's when you realize that there's something in the human being that pushes them to look a bit further than their own comfort.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where we are going to go for a short break, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we have to go for a change of mood and then we'll be back in no time. Thank you to our listeners for staying with us. Welcome back. This is Back to Reality, and we are talking about some very interesting stuff, which is brain drain. That's been something viral recently. I guess we can hear more of it than before, you know?
Yeah.
And we talked about it. We said that if we do not think ideal, then we would go for our comfort zone. We would pick whatever that is going to be more easy for me. I will choose my comfort. I will go to a country in which I would have so much of facilities. I would live a happy ever after life. And then I leave my country aside.
You wish. That's what people think when they go there, right? They think that it's all paradise over there. Yeah, but when they get there, they realize, actually, no, it's not like that.
Well, let's get something very much clear. See, life is difficult everywhere.
Yeah.
But the facilities differ.
I agree
with
that.
And this is the truth.
Definitely. But you have to realize that it's not all happy and merry over there either, mm-hmm. right? There, it has its own difficulties.
Of course. But there are some accounts of people who come and then talk about their travel. And then they say they're having a very pitchy life. Everything is pink and life is so so good and great.
Let me answer your question. Why do they act like this? It's not like everything is great, but they want to show you that everything is great because they want to soothe themselves. They want to actually heal their scars. They want to act in a way that they shouldn't be regretful like that.
You mean
they want to hide this feeling.
Just as in psychology, we have it. We use reverse psychology.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm saying something and I mean something else in order to just cover what I feel.
Yeah. I'm telling you that. And also, I think there is deeper reasons for intellectual people to immigrate. You know, mm-hmm. We're not talking about common people. We're talking about the educated people that are immigrating.
So what are the deeper reasons?
Nice question. I wanted to ask you first, but you asked me the same question. And
yeah, you fall in the same trap you had for me.
I think brain drain actually is a problem for any developing country that have to be solved. Mm-hmm. And, as an individual, even if I think idealistic and I say, okay, I stay here for my country to make it better, to make it, for example, a developed country or something like that, it's not possible because I'm an individual and this kind of changes. Need a society to move, you know, for this goal. So first of all, I want to tell you that because of this thought that you are an individual who cannot actually afford this big responsibility for society, so you have to let it go, then go for something easier that you can, you know. When you think that you cannot do something, you would choose another
way. So the reason is I want something for myself and I'm thinking selfishly.
It's not selfish. I'm telling you that because you think that you are disabled to do that, actually.
So I would say, firstly, if you want to be selfish, then you should also be thinking about the other aspects. So those mm-hmm. who travel to other countries, especially in the West, maybe they might be thinking of their comfort. Let's accept that there is comfort there. What about other factors? What about family life?
Exactly.
What about our religion, right? We're ready to give away everything just for comfort. If that's the premise somebody takes, that I'm living in this world just for comfort, just for money, just for pleasure, then yeah, go for it. Go ahead. If you get it over there, then well and good. You've satisfied your purpose in life. But if our purpose in life is higher than that, and you know we're Muslims, we understand that there is more than just this basic life, then we would be thinking, even if we want to think selfishly, then we would say, you know what? I may not be useful for my country. I'll get back to that because I disagree with that. I'll get back to that though. I may say that, okay, I can't be useful for my country over here, but I have my own beliefs to take care of. And therefore, I may not travel because of that, to take care of my own religion, to have a family life and so on.
Yeah, exactly true. Well, this was all the time that we had for today's episode. We actually were talking about brain drain. The sister, Bita, and brother Abu Zahra has mentioned so much of reasons for it. And actually, I guess we sort of looked beyond the box and there were some really delicate matters that we have to think of whenever we wish to leave our country for good. So thank you for staying with us. Thank you for staying tuned. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim. يا ربي لدي أمار رزقا
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا رب
بنتي وما رايز أكان لتعصي دايلعتك وانس أكان Let's become all again, proud again, cause I swear with firm belief in our hearts, we can bring back the glory of our past. My Ummah, he will say, Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. Look at where we were, look at where we are, tell me, is this how he'd wanted to be? Oh no, let's bring back our glory.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
United States should take history as a mirror and let it guide the future. That's what the Chinese President Xi Jinping told his American counterpart Joe Biden on the sidelines of the Group of 20 summit in Bali, Indonesia.
As always, I'm ready to have a candid and in-depth exchange of views with Mr. President on issues of strategic importance in China-US relations and major global and regional issues at our meeting today. I also look forward to working with you to bring China-US relations back to the track of healthy and stable development.
We share a responsibility, in my view, to show that China and the United States can manage our differences, prevent competition from becoming anything ever near conflict, and to find ways to work together on urgent global issues that require our mutual cooperation.
The two held their first ever in-person meeting as relations between Washington and Beijing are at their lowest in decades, marred by disagreements over a host of issues from Taiwan to trade. during the landmark three-hour meeting, the Chinese president warned his U.S. counterpart not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. According to the Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral relations. Biden, for his part, said the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Biden said he sought to assure Xi that U.S. policy on Taiwan has not changed, seeking to lower tensions over the self-ruled island.
And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan. And I made it clear that our policy on Taiwan has not changed at all. It's the same exact position we've had. I made it clear that we want to see cross-strait issues peacefully resolved.
On North Korea, Biden told Xi that Beijing has an obligation to attempt to talk Pyongyang out of conducting a seventh nuclear test. U.S.-China relations have been strained in recent years by growing tensions over issues ranging from Taiwan to the South China Sea, trade practices, and U.S. restrictions on Chinese technology. Regarding Taiwan, Beijing says it's a matter for the Chinese and China's internal affair. Anyone that seeks to split Taiwan from China will be violating the fundamental interests of the Chinese nation. Tensions over the self-ruled island have intensified following a provocative visit there in August by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The move prompted large-scale Chinese military drills around the island territory, as well as a declaration by the U.S. President Joe Biden to defend Taiwan. Beijing has time and again slammed U.S. provocations, including encouraging and supporting pro-separatist independence forces on the island, saying that Washington has no right to interfere in how to resolve the Taiwan issue. Also, Biden dropped the hammer on China's semiconductor industry by fully implementing a slew of tough controls on the export of American chip technology to China. It would also undermine China's ability to import, manufacture, and export the semiconductors that run the world. The goal was to slow down and prevent Chinese military and technological advances. Washington also takes sides with Beijing's rivals in a maritime dispute in the South China Sea by routinely sending warships and warplanes to the waters to assert what it calls its right to freedom of navigation. China has repeatedly called on Washington to stop the provocative actions, which undermine peace and stability in the strategic waters. Last month, the White House and the Pentagon declared Beijing as Washington's most serious strategic competitor, in reports outlining U.S. defense and foreign policy strategies. Therefore, despite Biden's meeting with Xi, can the two manage their differences to prevent conflict, or is it inevitable that the two are on the collision course? On Friday, French President Emmanuel Macron held a meeting with a number of U.S.-based anti-Iran figures at the Élysée. Among them, Masih Alinejad, who has for years led an anti-Iran campaign from the U.S. In the meeting, Macron described the recent riots in Iran as a revolution. Tehran strongly condemned the meeting, with the foreign ministry slamming it as a flagrant violation of France's international responsibilities in the fight against terrorism and violence. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani dismissed Macron's praise for an anti-Iran activist as regrettable and shameful. Kanani said it's surprising that the president of a country that advocates freedom would degrade himself by meeting a dissident who has tried to spread hatred and carry out violent and terrorist acts both inside Iran and against Iran's diplomatic missions abroad. Western media tried to portray Masih Alinejad as an activist. Reviewing Alinejad's social media posts, one would notice that much of her online activity revolves around the campaign through which she calls on her followers inside Iran to go on the streets, do something to provoke a reaction, record it, and then send the video file to her for online posting. She calls the campaign My Camera is My Weapon, a campaign hoping to achieve polarization, confrontation, and hatred in Iranian society. She's on the U.S. government payroll. Between 2015 and 2022, the U.S. Agency for Global Media paid Alinejad over $628,000 to use her show to push Iranian women into challenging Iranian laws, while also demanding more sanctions against her country. She has been living in the U.S. for the past decade, working as a full-timer for Voice of America Persian, a media outlet directly funded by the U.S. government, made to capitalize on harmful narratives in favor of Washington's interests.
It is interesting, but not surprising, to see Ahlinejad being hosted in Elysee Palace by French President Macron, who supported a law in his own country to criminalize the filming and dissemination of images showing the face or other identifying characteristics of a member of the National Police, the so-called Global Security Law, with imprisonment of up to 1 year and a fine of up to 45,000 euros for the offenders. The meeting with Macron was not the first of its kind. In 2019, Ahlinejad met Mike Pompeo, then U.S. Secretary of State, a hawkish politician with this mindset.
I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like we had entire training courses.
In 2018, Ahlinejad also joyfully met Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, whose hawkish mindset saw the U.S. sanctions killing of 500,000 Iraqi children as a price worth it.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but the price, we think the price is worth it.
Albright died earlier this year, but the brutal imperialist mindset is still alive and kicking, with the likes of Ahlinejad advocating for more economic terrorism. The organizer of the meeting between Ahlinejad and Macron is the New York-based Justice for Kurds group. The co-founders of this organization are Thomas S. Kaplan and Bernard Henry Levy. In Justice for Kurds, they are pursuing the goal of forming the state of Kurdistan, which is the result of the division of Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. Levy and Kaplan are both linked to the American hawkish group United Against Nuclear Iran, which pressured pharmaceutical firms to stop selling drugs to Iran amid a massive coronavirus outbreak in the country. Levy is a member, while Kaplan is one of the main funders of the group. Levy and Kaplan have lobbied for the interests of Saudi Arabia and the UAE to sanction Iran. Also, in 2019, a report revealed that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates had paid over $35 million to the UANI and its sister organization, the Counter-Extremism Project, over 2 years. In addition to Kaplan, Sheldon Adelson is one of the top donors to UANI. Reports show that Kaplan and Adelson accounted for over three-quarters of the group's total revenue for 2013. The UANI is one of the organizations that Tehran imposed sanctions on in late October for committing human rights violations, interfering in Iran's internal affairs, instigating violence and riots in the country, encouraging acts of terror, countering Tehran's moves and attempts to fight terrorism, and mounting pressure on the Iranian nation amounting to economic terrorism.
Bahrain has held its general elections. The regime was delighted. Authorities in the Sunni-ruled state, which crushed a 2011 anti-government uprising, said that the vote was free and put the turnout at 73%. But the vote was anything but free and fair. Rights groups called the voting environment of what is supposed to be a democratic process as political repression. They said there were highly restrictive measures that barred members of banned opposition groups. They added, holding this general election will not address the atmosphere of repression and the denial of human rights that has gripped Bahrain for years. This, in essence, would make the vote a sham, that it would be void of holding any value. It was no surprise that Bahrainis took to the streets to protest the electoral process and announced that they would boycott the election, since it served the political trajectory of the ruling class. Bahrain experienced an uprising in 2011, still ongoing till this day, in which the Bahraini regime dissolved the main opposition groups and cracked down on dissent. The regime's crackdown over the past 12 years has been brutal. According to a 61-page report, the court is satisfied with the confession. Bahrain death sentences follow torture, sham trials. The regime has arbitrarily arrested more than 20,000 and tortured more than 6,000 victims. This also includes extrajudicial killings of more than 200 and political death sentences, the dissolution of opposition political societies, and the demolition of 38 mosques. And this is happening in a Persian Gulf country that is a key ally of the U.S. in the region, home to the U.S.'s Navy's Fifth Fleet, and also the United Kingdom, which opened a permanent military base in 2018. The powerful Shia cleric Sharissa Qassem has said that the election means normalization. He said the elections constitute a test of the populace's awareness, explaining that to elect means opening the door for Bahraini citizenship-bearing Israelis to vote for parliament members. This would translate into how the electorate, meaning soldiers, dual citizens, security forces, those with personal interests in mind, and normalization advocates, would create a parliament for the government and not the people. The double standard approach by the UK and the US stands out when it comes to the issue of human rights and Bahrain. After all, Bahraini courts have convicted and sentenced defendants to death following manifestly unfair trials, based solely or primarily on confessions, allegedly coerced through torture and ill treatment. The governments of the US and the UK, as well as the European Union and its member states, should urge Bahrain, through both public and diplomatic channels, to halt all executions and to seriously investigate torture allegations and violations of the right to a fair trial. Yet they have chosen to do that with other countries, for example, Iran, which ironically has rioters out on the streets, endangering Iran's national security. According to Iran's intelligence minister, both the US and the UK even have a hand in the deadly protests, like to the CIA. A recent visit of the Pope to Bahrain posed an opportunity for the plight of Bahrainis to be addressed. 130 human rights organizations appealed to the Pope of the Vatican to demand the release of prisoners of conscience in Bahrain. They asked them to adopt an initiative urging the Bahraini authorities to end violations. But those hopes are dim. These 130 human rights organizations have cited how so many Bahrainis have faced discrimination, jail time, and torture. Yet Bahrain has always shifted the blame to Iran for the unrest. Could 130 human rights organizations be wrong, or for them to be lying? But Bahrain ultimately cannot have a democratic process because its big brother Saudi Arabia, which is just a stone's throw away, will be threatened by democracy taking place next door and will vehemently reject this, since it cannot risk having democracy creep into the kingdom. After all, Bahrain is joined only by a causeway to Saudi Arabia.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns of negative consequences if the UNHRC were to go ahead with demands of the West. He criticized the Western double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. In a phone call with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, he said, "Contrary to the UN Charter, few Western countries exploited the peaceful demands in Iran and encouraged violence and offered tutorials on building weapons and Molotov cocktails on media and social networks, which led to the killing of police and insecurity in Iran." He says that if a session is to be held on the riots in Iran, it should in fact probe into foreign governments' role in encouraging violence and terror and not on the country that is a true defender of human rights. What Amir Abdullahian is referring to is the piling evidence of actual foreign involvement in the riots, perhaps the most compelling of which was revealed through a joint statement by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps and the Ministry of Intelligence. In it, the country's two top intelligence bodies pointed out the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the riots. They revealed that they have gone as far as dividing the riots in different stages of pre-unrest, during unrest, and post-unrest. Perhaps the primary way foreign governments, especially the US, UK, and Saudi Arabia, were involved was through supporting foreign Farsi-speaking media that played on people's emotions over a tragic death and capitalized on existing grievances to attempt to overthrow the Islamic establishment through something like a coup d'etat. Iran has warned the UK of consequences for hosting the so-called Iran International Channel, which Iran has recognized as a terrorist organization. Iran also warned Germany for voicing its support for the rioters and calling on the EU to implement more sanctions against Iran. Amir Saeed Iravani, Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations, responded to the U.S. cries of women's rights and human rights being violated in Iran and its calls for a special session to, quote, highlight the ongoing repression of women and girls and members of religious and ethnic minority groups by saying this. The United States lacks the political, moral, and legal qualifications to hold such a meeting, distorting the very basic principles of human rights. He also added, the U.S. has no true and genuine concern about the human rights situation in Iran or elsewhere. Perhaps he was referring to the role that the U.S. has been playing in destabilizing the West Asia region and carrying out terrorist attacks there. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya, and its unwavering support for Israeli crimes against Palestinians, don't even begin to tell the whole story on U.S.'s destabilizing acts in the region. The U.K.'s involvement in Syria, funding terrorist groups and being one of the coalition members of the fight against Yemen also nullifies their cries over human rights violations anywhere in the world.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك. ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. And here are some of the students of Sevier International Schools, Brother Fawad Haider, Brother Hussein Ruhullah and Hassan Nasrullah, and Brother Ali Nasir. Assalamu alaikum jami'an wa rahmatullah, and welcome.
Wa alaikum
salam. How are you?
Assalam.
Everyone?
Yes.
That's great. Welcome. Let's recommend our brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now to stay with us till the end of this Quranic session, inshallah. So today, inshallah, we'll be working on ayah 81 and also ayah 82 of Surah Al-Baqarah. So make sure, inshallah, brothers and sisters who are listening to us, please get your Qurans, okay, open. Turn to Surah Al-Baqarah verses 81 and 82. So before we go, let's listen to these two verses. All right, nice recitation, alhamdulillah. Now we will be, inshallah, having a nice recitation, okay? Make sure
yes.
you listen and repeat after me. Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بلى من كسب سيئة وأحاطت به خطيئته فأولئك أصحاب النار
بلى من كسب سيئة وأحاطت به خطيئته فأولئك أصحاب النار
هم فيها خالدون
هم فيها خالدون
أحسن. Next ayah, ayah 82.
والذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك أصحاب الجنة
والذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك أصحاب الجنة
هم فيها خالدون
هم فيها خالدون
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. بلى من كسب سيئة وأحاطت به خطيئته فأولئك أصحاب النار هم فيها خالدون. Allah Almighty says, certainly whoever commits wrong things or sins, okay, misdeeds, and is besieged by his iniquity, such shall be the inmates of the fire, and they shall remain in it forever. All right? So, in this ayah, Allah Almighty talks about those who are doing wrong things. Okay? All right? And in the next ayah, Allah Almighty talks about those who do righteous deeds. Okay, now, وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ أُولَٰئِكَ أَصْحَابُ الْجَنَّةِ هُمْ فِيهَا خَالِدُونَ. And those who have faith and do righteous deeds, they shall be the inhabitants of paradise. They shall remain in it forever. So, guys, one point I have to tell you. It's clear, okay? Those who do wrong things, they will go to?
Hell.
Hell. Those who do right things, they'll go to?
Heaven.
This is something we deserve. Because Allah Almighty has set some rules. And the rules are going to lead us to perfection. So, if something is done just opposite to these rules, okay? If these rules are not followed, so of course, we will not get to perfection. So, when we do not get to perfection, of course, what is the next option?
Hell.
Huh? Disaster.
Yes.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, so we, of course, will go to hell. But there is something. If someone does a bad thing, so Allah Almighty has given him a chance to perform repentance, to repent, okay, towards Allah Almighty. Okay, and he has to turn back to Allah Almighty. Tawbah, make tawbah. So if his tawbah is a tawbah that he promises that he will not do and he does not do it again, it will be acceptable and he will go to the heaven. He will be blessed by Allah Almighty. But if he continues doing the wrong things, of course, finally he becomes like a pharaoh, okay? The pharaoh in the water, he was sinking, okay? And he said, oh God, amantu billah. I have believed now to Allah Almighty. Forgive me, please. Allah Almighty said, no, it's not the time. We had given you bunches, thousands of chances, but you didn't. So now it's not the time. So, then, we have one thing. If someone commits a sin intentionally by his own willingness, okay, he has the option to choose doing right deeds or wrong deeds. If he chooses the wrong deeds, okay, to do bad things, to commit sins, intentionally, of course, he will be punished for that. But if someone forces him to do something, forces him to do something, to commit sin, so in that case, you will not be punished. If you do not have your own will, okay, willingness, somebody forces you, puts a gun on you, okay, to tell a lie. So if you can, yes.
Satan kind of forces you.
Huh?
Shaitan kind of forces you.
Shaitan does not force you. Shaitan invites you. Inviting and forcing is two different. Shaitan does not put a gun on your forehead. Do it. Do it. No. Just invites you. In the day of judgment, Shaitan will come there, okay? We will say, oh God, Shaitan misled us. Shaitan will come. No, I didn't. I just invited them. 124,000 prophets and 12 imams came and invited you. You didn't accept their words. How did you accept my words? So it was you, your option.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي.
How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
So, guys, that's all about these two verses, okay? وَعَمِلُ الصَّالِحَاتِ أُولَٰئِكَ أَصْحَابُ الْجَنَّةِ هُمْ فِيهَا خَالِدُونَ. So, inshallah, there are long discussions, but we'll not get through. I'll go to Tajweed Rus, inshallah. بَلَى مَنْ كَسَبَ سَيِّئَةً مَنْ نُنْسَاكِنْ. بَلَى is a word, okay, that tries to, for example, deny the thing which is before and approve a new thing. For example, they say that if some people say that we will not go to heaven, we will not go to hell, even if we commit sins. But if you say bala, it means no, you will go to hell if you commit sins. Did you get me?
Yes.
Someone says that even if I commit sins, I will not go to hell. But the Quran says bala, no, if you do it, you will go. Right? Bala man kasaba. Man kasaba nun sakin plus kaf. Make sure you do the ikhfa, but the ikhfa must be kind of clear that there is the letter kaf coming after nun sakin. Bala man kasaba, right?
Yes.
Bala man kasaba sayyatan plus waw. Tanween plus waw. What rule is applied?
Idgham.
With ghunna or without ghunna?
With
ghunna. Sayyatan. Right. Wa ahatat. Ahatat.
Yes.
Make sure this ta, the letter ta, should not be so much obviously pronounced. Okay, like kind of this. Wa ahatat. Sound no. Wa ahatat. Wa ahatat. Not sound. Okay. Bihi khati'atuhu. Khati'atuhu. Too long vowel sounds. Fa'ula'ika. This is wajib, yes? Wajib muttasil. Ashabun nar. Sala or sali again tells you that
better to continue.
Better to continue, but you have the option to stop here.
Yes.
Yeah? You can stop, but yep, continuing is better.
Yeah.
هُمْ فِيهَا خَالِدُونَ مَدْ عَارِضْ لِلسُّكُونَ. If you stop here, you prolong the sound. هُمْ فِيهَا خَالِدُونَ دُون. While it is a natural mad, but you can prolong it. The next ayah. Do you have any questions here?
No, sir.
Okay. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ. We had a rule that if we have mad letter like u, a, e plus hamzatul wasl, hamzatul wasl of course will be skipped, so this mad sound will be skipped too. وَعَمِلُوا,
yeah.
We have waw mad u and then hamzatul wasl الصَّالِحَاتِ. So here we need join this together. وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ. Look, lus, not loose. We don't have loose. Quickly change that mad letter to a short vowel sound. وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ
أولئك أصحاب الجنة. نون مشدد. Make sure you produce a nasal sound. جنتي. Or if you stop here, جن.
نه.
نه.
Yes.
Change to ha.
تا مربوطة will be changed to ha. And the harakat, whatever harakat it has, فتحة كسرة ضمة, or it has تنوين فتحة تنوين كسرة تنوين ضمة, change it to سكون. If it has a سكون, it's great then. أصحاب الجنة هم فيها خالدون. Look, in the previous ayah we had هم فيها خالدون. Here as well we have هم فيها خالدون. But some in the heaven, some in the hellfire. You have the option. Alright? In some verses of the Quran we have that Allah Almighty says that shaitan leads you towards hellfire. Yes. Exactly, Allah Almighty says this. So make sure, okay? God forbid, if you go to hell, okay? Make sure. Even if you fight shaitan in that time, okay? Shaitan will deny everything. Shaitan is shaitan, that's why. So, thank you so much. If you had any questions in Tajweed rules, make sure you listen again and practice and listen to our previous sessions, inshallah. And for the explanations, make sure, inshallah, you refer to the interpretations of the Quran Kareem. Thank you so much. See you. Please stay with us with the next coming sessions. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools Network. Do you have any questions?
No, sir.
Let's say bye-bye to all our friends. May Allah Almighty protect you all from all evils. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi at-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraj.
Arabic salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Go on, 1, 2, 3.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلي محمد وعجل فرج.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.